right. All right. Well, this is our last Sunday for the month, so let's turn to Psalms chapter 1 again. Psalm chapter 1. I'm also going to be in Proverbs chapter 16. Psalm chapter 1. I've enjoyed going through this. And I don't know. The thing about the Bible that the devil tries to put in people's minds is how overcomplicated it is to understand. But when you really start going through it and just boiling it down, it's very simple. There's not a whole lot of fundamental things that you have to, you know, remember. It's just very simple. Very simple. And just bears looking at. And then you can tell who's been telling the lies about how complicated it is. Psalm chapter 1. I'm going to start there in verse number 4. Remember last week we talked about being planted like a tree by the rivers of water. Talking about the righteous man. The man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly. So, you'd be like a tree planted by the rivers of water. And then, in verse 4, starting there, it says, the ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. We're going to talk about the way of the ungodly this morning. It's, you know, there's the counsel of the ungodly, but there's the way of the ungodly too. There's, you know, in this world, we used to talk about it on the way even to church this morning. Some of the, you know, some of the things we talk about a lot with our kids and stuff is that, you know, the evils of this spirit of diversity that the world really tries to push on everybody, and then it ain't them trying to. Everybody laps it up. It's you remember, well, yesterday morning we was up over here and I was telling you about that conversation between, you know, my daughter and that friend of hers that messaged her, and you know, this subject of inclusivity and acceptance and tolerance and, you know, diversity is beautiful and all that kind of thing. And she just kind of, it was a baited question she asked my daughter. And, you know, the answer she got determined which way she was going to side with that day. And, of course, when she got the answer she got, oh, she was on her side. Yeah, you're right. That's right. That's right. That's right. But the question she asked was leading in the opposite direction. And, you know, there's so much, the devil is so subtle. But it's just like I've talked about trapping before. You know, the same bait that they used to use 150 years ago to trap with is the same stuff they're using today to catch the same kind of critters. Over and that proves to me right there that evolution is not true. Just in that simple little thing. If it was, then they would have learned by now that, you know, the coyotes would have learned that if something smells like a skunk but there's not a skunk there, it's probably not a skunk in that tiny little hole. They wouldn't step in that trap because they like skunks. But, you know, the devil and the message that he tries, that he plies his deception upon the masses with is this matter of inclusivity, or the notion that diversity is the most beautiful thing in the world. You know, the way we're all so different is what makes everyone so special. Well, I don't know. The old timers didn't used to feel that way, you know. There was things that they expected society to all be the same in, and that's what made everything flow the way it should. And it's the same way with the Word of God. The devil's tried to take and make the Word of God so diverse for everybody and every point of view and every way of life and every walk of life and every, you know, harebrained notion that you might have about anything in your life. You can find a Bible verse for it in some version of it that supports your harebrained idea. And that's what the devil's deception of diversity and inclusivity has done to our society. Bottom line is that there's two paths in this life. There's two ways that you can go in this life. the way of the righteous and the way of the ungodly. There's no middle ground. There's no gray area. You know, that's what inclusivity and all this stuff has created, is a huge space in the middle of the road for everybody to exist in, where you're not wrong, but you're not right, but you're just this whole other thing. And that's not how it is. There's the way of the righteous and the way of the ungodly. And, you know, had a lot of conversations with a lot of different people this week about, you know, things from our past and just stuff you found out about folks. And Lord have mercy, it's just what a mess everybody's life is in. And they've sat in church their entire life. Sat in church their entire life. And why? Why is their life such a mess? Why has there been so much confusion and so much distortion on everything that has screwed up their life so bad, and their idea about God and about right and wrong, even if they've been the victims of it? That's just what I'm talking about right now. It's this imaginary middle of the road position that everybody, even people in church, that's where they like to ride, right there in the middle. You know, because they can't be condemned by either side, in their opinion, in their mind. They can't be condemned by the wicked for being so right-wing and so narrow-minded that they can't even, you know, tolerate somebody that's a sinner being in their church to come and hear about Jesus. But then on the other side of the spectrum, they can't be condemned by the church because of being so wicked that they're just out in gross sin. You know, I talked yesterday at the prayer breakfast about he who hideth his sin. And that's, you know, everybody's got real good at that. They're just hiding the things that they don't want either side to know about. And when they bring them out, depends on who they're with. And the Bible says that the way of the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. And so there's only two places to be. You know, when I was growing up and started, you know, turning away and looking over the fence, to me, and I remember, it's funny how you remember conversations you had with people, even like you, Dad. I remember some things I said to you back when I was a teenager that I think about them now, and I'm, you know, it's comical that I was so, you know, ignorant about the way things really are. Not just as, you know, a dumb teenager. I'm just saying being so, it's the way things have always been. And I wouldn't accept it, I guess. It's just, in my mind, the notion I had was that, you know, I was just going to do things a different way than I guess I thought anybody else ever had. I don't know. I remember one time telling you that, you know, we were talking about, you had told me, you know, why don't you want to do something for the Lord with your life? You know, and of course, I voiced it very clearly. I didn't feel, you know, any kind of inclination to even a desire to be in the ministry in any way that way. You know, I could stay home and I could work and I could give to people who were bent that way. And, you know, it was a foolish thing to say and a foolish way to feel. But my thought process about the whole thing was that I was headed for that middle of the road. See, I didn't want to go out here and become a dope head or some kind of alcoholic or somebody who, you know, had a bunch of different kids by a bunch of different girls and shame my family and shame the church and live in just open, gross rebellion against everything that I'd ever grew up. I mean, I justified who I was because of how I felt, you know, some respect for my dad and my church and my mom and my family name and all this kind of stuff. And I just created this space in between the two points that where I justified myself. Now, was I doing right? Well, absolutely not. I was doing all the things that everybody else was doing. But because of these other things that I would still participate in and involve myself in life, at church and in good things or whatever, I justified the stuff I was doing over here. You know, I wasn't walking in the way of the righteous, but in my mind, I wasn't walking in the way of the ungodly either, because I wasn't, you know, some rank sinner in my mind. I just wasn't some, you know, tambourine slapping, Bible thumping nut job. Well, honestly, in my mind, it's funny how, you know, in a sinner's mind, there's all these different spaces to be, except for religious people. And then they're all either good old boys or just like me, or they're all nut jobs. But what about themselves? You know, are you, you know, they'll create all these different spaces and slots and, you know, different badges to wear of who they are, depending on what they feel like today. Matter of fact, whatever. But not for people who love the Lord. They're all, you know, bigots and narrow-minded people, haters and unaccepting and holier than thou. And I mean, the list goes on. We've all heard the things that they, the monikers they put on the way of the righteous. But, you know, only two paths. There's no middle ground. I want to turn over to Proverbs 16 and read a few verses there. We'll go through some stuff there. Proverbs 16, verse 25. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. He's talking about these people that are walking in the way of the ungodly. He's talking about the way of the ungodly. This man in verse 25 that he's talking about, in verse 25 through 30, He walks in the way of the ungodly. Verse 25, they devise their own path based on their observation and their own understanding, and not God's word. The way that he's walking in seems right to him. He don't see a thing in the world wrong with it. What right does anybody else have to say anything to him about the things that he... I mean, what, do they think he's an idiot? I mean, he can read and he can look around and he can have conversations with people. Seems right to him. I've seen the sign on at the florist in Piedmont has done went all to pot. I'm so tired of seeing the junk that they put on that stupid sign. I'm trying to remember what it said this morning. My family, said something along the lines of my family and my perception determine my reality. That's literally, I think, what it said. There's like the dumbest thing. I had to think about it for, I'm like, who is in charge of the sign? I mean, somebody's drawing the short straw every time. Because somebody else ain't got no brains is putting stuff on that sign all the time. No, I'll tell you, somebody's walking in the way of the ungodly is who's putting stuff on that sign all the time. I don't really care who hears that. You know, that is such worldly counsel. It's, well, it is the influence of worldly counsel that produces stuff like that. But do you want to know what they were thinking as they slid those letters in that sign? Seemed right to them.
Yeah.
Seemed right to them. Why? Well, because they're walking in the way of the ungodly. Verse 26, he that laboreth for himself, for his... he that laboreth for himself, for his mouth craveth it of him. These people walking after the counsel of the ungodly, these people, the way of the ungodly, that's where they live at. They're self-serving. That's why they'll try to come across as being so kind and so understanding, so diverse and so accepting of all this, you know, diversity, and you can be whatever you want to be and follow your heart and follow your arrow. That's a new thing. Duh, follow, what are you talking about? Follow your arrow. Well, they'll be that way. They'll try to come across that way. But at the end of the day, even their benevolence, even their kindness to other people, is done so that it makes them look good or makes them feel good about themselves. You know, there's all kinds of organizations and everything else that you can be a member of that are all about benevolence and all about, you know, giving and all about helping people. But and even some of them are even like very clandestine and very secretive. But at the end of the day, you want to know what makes them feel good about what they do? Because they can go and sit in their little building with no windows in it and make each other feel good about being so benevolent and being so kind. They're self-serving. You know, honestly, their God is themselves. They're pleasing themselves by even the good that they do. They don't do it for the Lord. They do it for the praise of men. And even if they don't get that, they still feel pretty doggone good about themselves. They give all these kids coats. Had a guy tell me that one time, you know, talk about, you know, joining with his organization because they do so much good. He said, you know, if you ever experience the look in a child's eye when you give them a coat when they're cold. And I'm like, I have done that before. And he looked at me and I said, through my local church. You know, the thing God ordained for Christians to be benevolent through and to represent Him. If I do it through your organization, then we get the glory. If I do it through my local church and do it for the Lord, then He gets the glory for it. See? That my labor is not for myself. It's for Him. And, well, that man walks in the paths of the ungodly. The way of the ungodly. Number 27, verse 27, an ungodly man diggeth up evil. And his lips, and in his lips there is as a burning fire. He diggeth up evil. These are all things. If you want to, we've been talking about all month about, you know, observing yourself, examining yourself, you know, putting yourself to the test. And in also this being the guiding light that helps you be able to determine who you will associate with, who you'll join up with, who you'll believe their testimony. By their fruits you shall know them. This is what it's talking about. This is some of the things I'm talking about here. The way that they go seems right to them. They determine their own path. They devise their own path. They labor for themselves. They want the glory. The third thing, cannot keep their mouth shut. They have to talk about the things they know about other people. I know people, and then, you know, here once again, preach right into the mirror because, you know, it's hard. Have you ever been in a group of people and you're having a conversation with somebody, but the conversation's not really engaging? It's just like, you know, how's your mom and them? Blah, 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 blah. But somebody's standing right there and you hear what they're talking about. And it's way more interesting. And it's something you really, really want to hear. But you can't be rude to the person that you're standing there looking at because you're already having a conversation with them. And so you kind of tune them down and you tune these people over here up because you've got to hear, and in the end, you don't really hear either thing that you're listening. I mean, then the person's looking at you, realize they're just standing there like waiting for a response from you, and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, what was that? Yeah, and they know that you were listening to the person standing right there. And I know people who literally have friendships just so. They're only a source of information. That's the only reason that they're friends with these people is because they know that person has their ear to the ground in a lot of different directions, and they can get information from them. Not to even necessarily go spread it around. They just got to know. They just got to know. I mean, who are you talking about? Who are you saying that about? What about, you know, they just got to know. And it's funny because I think part of what's initiated that in our minds, in our lives, is our phones. You know, social media lets you know everything about everybody that's on your social media and then some. And so in real, but see, social media is fake. It's not real life, you know. So in real life, we try to treat real life like social media and we've got to know, you know, we got to know. And an ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips there is as a burning fire. There are people, and man, don't be, if I am this kind of person, then I'm walking in, you know, the way of the ungodly. This is how the ungodly live their life. You know, some of them are way worse about it than others. But it's something that's it's a consistent thing with all of them. It was with me. When I walked in the way of the ungodly, this is one of the things that I prided myself in is knowing. I knew everything about everybody. Now, I was a good enough man to where I didn't run my mouth about people. I didn't spread rumors and gossip. But I just knew. I knew stuff. I knew everything about everybody. I had my ear to the ground. I knew what was going on. I wasn't some, you know, walking around with my head in the clouds. I knew what was going on. And it ain't even got to be about gossip about somebody or who's, you know, running around on who. It ain't even about that kind of stuff. It's just this obsession with having to know everybody else's business. You walk in the path of the way of the ungodly, you just become obsessed with it. It becomes like a burning fire. His lips there is as a burning fire. You ever get in a conversation with somebody and it always goes that direction where before it's over, I mean, just right away, you're talking about other people. You know, I try to, you know, if you work a public job and you know what I'm talking about, you learn to avoid those people that come and want to talk to you about because there's all kinds of names that people give them, even in the way of the ungodly, but they like to start trouble. And they're asking you baited questions all the time so that they can get little tidbits of information so that they've got that in them. And then it's there handy. They can either use it to gain favor with another friend or they can use it as blackmail against you if it's in the right scenario. I mean, it's just like it's their weapons. They got to know. And man, there's a lot more to life than finding out everybody else's business and involving yourself in everybody else's business. You know? I mean, even in a marriage, there are things that are kind of sanctum sanctorum, they call it. Like there's things that go on in her mind that unless she shares them with me, I almost don't feel like I have a right to pry into that. This is between her and God. If she chooses to share that with me, then that's her business. You know, I don't believe in secrets between spouses, but I'm saying that there's things that spiritually that I struggle with on a daily basis sometimes that I can't just dump all over her. It don't, you know, I don't have to know everything that's going on. Move on down through here. Verse 28. A froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. This goes hand in hand with the previous verse. He soweth strife. He takes all those things that he knows, and he just can't, them lips that have that burning fire in them, he can't keep them shut. And, you know, it's like Mrs. Olson on The Little House. She just, that's what she, everybody hates her so bad to this day, all these years later. But why? Well, this is what she did. She would ask baited questions. She'd find out, and then she would just wreak havoc on somebody's life because of the things that she would say. Oh, I've said too much. And, yeah, that's a show, and it was funny and ha-ha, but, you know, have you ever been done that way by somebody? I have. It's not funny. You know, and it's more than just making you angry. It's hurtful. And half the time it's coming from people that say they love you, your friends or your family, you know. And it causes so much trouble. He stirreth up strife. A man that walks in the way of the ungodly stirs up strife. Because he's so self-serving, he will not be satisfied with just an unbridled tongue. He enjoys the strife and chaos it generates. He seeks for opportunities to not only tell and speak the gossip or the rumors that he's heard, but he'll do it successfully with the full intention of breaking up relationships. It may not start that way, but it grows into that until the point where it's just like somebody's really good at it. And they take great pleasure in, you know, playing the long game even in the deal. Like they're willing to play something out for months in order to see the destruction at the end of it. And you know, I've had people in my life literally tell me something that I thought they were telling me in confidence. And when I say confidence, they told this to me not in confidence, like, don't tell a soul. They didn't say nothing like that. But they knew that I would go home and I would talk to my wife about it. And then this person's wife would ask baited questions months later to my wife and find out that I had told her. And they set the whole thing up on purpose so that they could confront me and say, see, I knew you went and told people the things I told you. And it was of unimportant things. But they would tell me, I asked you that question on purpose because I knew you'd tell her. I've had them do that to me over unimportant things, but just to set me up to make me seem like a gossiper. You know, they loved what they did, really enjoyed it. And it was hurtful. And it was destructive. It destroyed the relationship. That kind of stuff's what did it. It's the way of the ungodly. A man who is walking in the way of righteousness does not do that to people. You don't do that. It don't please the Lord at all. Verse 29, a violent man enticeth his neighbor and leadeth him into the way that is not good. Enticeth him. You know, it's always been a thing that I don't understand about someone who can, like, own a beer joint, you know, own a bar. Or, you know, let's take it a step for, like, the drug dealers and things. I mean, I've known guys who sell dope. I've known them. I've known quite a few of them through my lifetime. The different kinds of things that I've done for a living, the construction and different things like that. I've known guys who, honestly, their real job is just their side hustle. Their money-making jobs, their dope selling. And if you didn't know that about it, I found out about it after the fact, like later on down the road after I've known them forever, and then I find out that this is what they've been. Because they were real good at hiding it and just coming across as just like a really good guy. And they do so much, you know, other things that are misleading and making you believe that they're decent people. The fact of the matter is that, you know, they don't care about what they're doing, how it affects other people's lives. They entice their neighbor and lead them in the way that's not good. You know, all of us in here know probably a bunch of people whose life has been destroyed by drugs. You know, we talk about some fellas that we know, you know, all the time, that it just makes you cry. Because you'll see them this month. Boy, they're working, they're doing good. And you see them 30 days later. And they've lost 40 pounds. Their eyes are sunk into their head. And they're walking down the highway or something. And they're just like a stray dog. And, you know, where do you think they got that stuff from? They got it from some man. See, comes across as being everybody's friend, but a person who does that to someone else is violent. They're violent. And violence doesn't necessarily mean they get a club and go beat on them. No. No, they give them something that ruins their life. I mean, they literally would sell their own soul to have it again. And again, and again, and that's the destruction. That's the violence perpetrated on somebody by some violent person. A violent man walking in the way of the ungodly. He leadeth his neighbor. He entices him and leads him into a way that's not good. Verse 30, shutteth his eyes to devise froward things. Moving his lips, he bringeth evil to pass. Sits around dreams of ways, new ways to do this kind of stuff. See, it doesn't start out that way with a young man that starts walking in the counsel of the ungodly and standing in the way of sinners. Remember, we talked about the progression that happens there. By the time it's over with, he's the man that's sitting in the seat of the scornful. Not being scorned, no, he's the scorner. It's the same way with this. You walk in the way of the ungodly, It starts out innocent enough, and you are completely convinced that it is okay. And before it's over with, this is the creature that it turns you into. You enjoy watching somebody destroy themselves because of something you've done. You think it's funny. You enjoy watching someone suffer. Why do you think there's so much, you know, perversion that way of making people? Well, what's all these movies about people that hurt other people and torture and kill other people and do all these awful things? What kind of mind enjoys sitting watching these horror films and stuff that involve that kind of stuff? That kind of mind right there. So think about a 15-year-old kid that loves that kind of stuff. Look how fast it happened for them. They just passed go all the way around the board to the deepest part of it. Some people, it takes them a long time. Because they know it's wrong, so they skirt around the outside edges of it for the longest time. Once again, like talking about the trapping, you know, if you catch a coyote in a trap once, they always tell you move the trap, move it 6 feet over there, because if you keep, you know, the smell of what happened there, that coyote being caught, will attract others. But if you keep setting it in the same spot, you can set a camera up on it and watch them, and they'll just start circling it. And they won't get close. They'll just get right up, and they know something ain't right. That's the way some people approach this path of the ungodly. They know it's not the right way. So they approach it with, you know, tentativeness, and you know, they know it's, I know. But it's like that coyote. You set the trap 6 foot right there, and he knows there's been, you know, something bad has happened right here. But eventually, you'll get him. You'll get him. Because he just cannot stay away from it. He'll approach it real cautious, but it'll still get him. And that's the way this is. It's a trap. The devil baits it with all kinds of good stuff. But I'm telling you, by the time that it's over with, you're the guy right here. You shut your eyes to devise forward things. Moving his lips, he bringeth evil to pass. You ever heard somebody say, if his mouth's moving, he's lying? If his lips are moving, he's lying? That's where that come from. We all know a bunch of people like that too. There's only two paths in this life that we're supposed to be acknowledging that they even exist. And one of them is to be pursued, and one of them is to be avoided. And heaven help us. You know, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. His delight is in the law of the Lord. His law doth he meditate day and night, and he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The ungodly, they're not so. They're like the chaff, which the wind driveth away. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment. That pride that makes them stand up in your face right now, it's going to be gone. They'll not be able to stand in the judgment. They won't even be able to sit in the congregation of the righteous for very long. Not if that congregation is righteous. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. It says that there is only one result for the way of the ungodly. It only leads to one place. That's perish. You perish. It doesn't matter how high you fly on the journey. The end is going to be destruction. And most of the time in this life. Not before you get to hell and eternity and damnation. No, you're going to perish in this life. Your life will come apart and perish. The chaff, I think about that. When I worked with Kenny, we'd take them bales of straw and grind them up and blow them all over them yards. And that's chaff. It served a real good purpose. It even produced fruit. But at the end of the day, it was just the debris, it was waste. and it got blowed out on a yard somewhere and laid there until it rotted. And most of the time the wind literally blows it away. That's where the path of the ungodly leads. It leads to that. They're like the chaff. They're gone. You ever take a leaf blower and try to clean off your driveway and you got some dirt on there or whatever and you just hit it with that wind and it just disappears. It's just gone. You can never get that dirt and put it all back in one spot again. It's gone. That's where the path of the ungodly leads. Let's really examine ourselves all the time, daily. Make sure we're walking in the right way. The paths of righteousness.